Hello and welcome to Inside Education. We're online at insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on this week's programme.
It was my own primary school teacher actually in second class brought in a video of the Helen Keller story, and as a child it was my first time to see sign language and I was completely captivated by it and wanted to know more about it.
On the 120th edition of Inside Education, we'll find out how students who are deaf experience our education system and about what educators can do to accommodate their needs. But first, Barry Hennessy joins us for Education News. Barry, as news of the education budget filters out to schools, principals and teachers in schools that are designated as disadvantaged are unhappy about some of the changes. Can you tell us more about this?
Yes, Sean. Well, I suppose what I would say is that the various documents that came out to communicate the education budget published on the Department of Education's website were crafted in such a way this year as to convey the impression that frontline school staffing had been very significantly protected in the budget. There was no change to the headline pupil-teacher ratio at primary, which remained at 28-1, and no change either to the headline ratio in post-primary, which remained at 19-1. And indeed, in the immediate aftermath of the budget, such negative comment as there was primarily concerned the changes to guidance in post-primary, where, as we reported last week, schools will no longer get an allocation for guidance outside of their teacher allocation. Rather, they will now have to make provision for guidance, which is required, in fact, under the Education Act anyway, from within their initial allocation of staff. So that was where, if you like, most of the negative comment in the first few days was. And what happened, I suppose, in the early part of this week was that there was the emergence of a particular group of principals, and this was covered in the national media, from Desh Band 1 primary schools, who sought to draw attention to the fact that certain measures within the allocation of teachers to Desh schools would mean that their schools would be disproportionately affected by cuts to staffing in 2012 if no alleviation was given.
And what was the outcome of those meetings, Barry?
Yeah, because essentially, Sean, there were a couple of meetings during the week. There were two meetings in particular. There was a meeting between a group of principals, Labour backbench TDs and Minister Quinn. In addition to that, the INTO met with Minister Quinn late in the week. And the INTO have published on their website in details of alleviations to the cuts specifically affecting Desh schools. This is not as of yet on the department's website, but it is on the INTO's website. And what we're now being told is that we're talking about Desh primary schools here, and the initial proposal in the budget was that they would have a ratio of 22-1 as opposed to the normal 28-1. What has now happened is that the ratio for junior Desh Band 1 schools will now be 20-1. Senior classes in Desh Band 1 schools will be at 24-1. And then, Sean, there are about 32 junior Desh Band 1 schools. These are, I suppose, the most disadvantaged schools in the country. And they have traditionally enjoyed, certainly for several years enjoyed, a 15-1 pupil-teacher ratio. They will now have a PTR of 18-1. It is those schools that would have been going up to 22-1 under the initial proposal in the budget who were the schools arguing that they were going to be, in some cases, losing up to a quarter of their teaching staff.
And Barry, meanwhile, another cut in the budget seems to have gone completely unreported.
Yeah, we're going to talk about school completion programme, Sean, and I suppose this cut has passed everybody by because it was moved over to the Department of Children and Youth Affairs earlier in the year. So when people were looking to report on the education budget, they didn't see it at all. The school completion programme is having a cut of 6% of its budget. That's about €2 million for the year 2012. And this is something that primarily operates in the more disadvantaged schools.
And what exactly does it involve in those schools?
Yeah, various supports. The ones that people would be, I think, more familiar with would be things like breakfast clubs and homework clubs. You know, we need to bear in mind that for various reasons in disadvantaged areas, children will be coming from backgrounds where low levels of educational attainment in the broader community will mean that their parents will often be very hindered at helping the children with homework in the way that children from arguably from more privileged backgrounds, more affluent backgrounds would enjoy. So basically the homework club would operate in the school. It would be staffed by various people. There would be teacher involvement. There would also be, in some cases, involvement of parents or, you know, people from the wider community. And, most people would regard homework clubs as doing a tremendous amount of good. Now, when the school completion programme gets a cut in its budget, the real issue on the ground for coordinators of the school completion programme is going to be, well, you know, do we run everything 3 or 4 days in the week, or do we maybe cut the first year homework club down to just 3 days or 2 days in the week? Can we justify having three teachers in the room for first year homework club, or do we maybe go down to two? You know, we will be, I think, we have to be honest here and say that a 6% cut is not a massive cut. But what the government is also heralding, and I think this is very important, is that in 2012, in the year ahead, there is going to be a complete review of the school completion programme. And I think it's that line that has caused some concern, because I suppose it's only human nature for people to fear that there won't exactly be increased resources available to the school completion programme anytime soon.
So the cut barrier of 6% was just across the board, and it's up to local schools to decide how they're going to implement that cut. Is that right?
Yes, I've spoken to one or two coordinators within school completion programmes who have told me that effectively they will then have to sit down, look at the programme that is in place in the schools that they operate. Sometimes you would have a coordinator in place for, say, a number of schools in a particular area with a programme in place tailored to the needs of those schools. And obviously there's going to be an impact on frontline services to the order of 6% there, depending on how it's passed on.
Thanks very much for that, Barry. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, which is insideed.com. Dr. Elizabeth Matthews is the coordinator of the newly established Deaf Education Centre on the Marion campus in Cabra. She received her MA degree in Deaf Education in the United States in 2005, and in 2010 she received her PhD from NUI Maynooth. The title of her dissertation is Mainstreaming of Deaf Education in the Republic of Ireland, Language, Power and Resistance. In order to find out more about what kind of provision is available for students in Irish schools who are deaf or hard of hearing, I met up with Elizabeth Matthews to find out more about how the students can participate more fully in the education system. In the course of the interview, Elizabeth Matthews refers to a cochlear implant. A cochlear implant is a surgically implanted electronic device which converts sounds into electrical signals and sends those signals directly to the hearing nerve, bypassing damaged structures of the inner ear and onto the brain. I began the interview by asking Elizabeth to summarise the opportunities that currently exist for students, that currently exist in our education system for students who are deaf or hard of hearing.
Most of the opportunities that would exist for hearing children exist for deaf and hard of hearing children as well. In general, they would have four different options in terms of where they go to school at primary level. The first option would be their local mainstream school, so they might go there with their siblings or neighbours. The second option open to them would be to attend a unit for deaf children that's attached to a mainstream school, so that's like a special class for a small group of deaf children within a mainstream school. The third option then would be the schools for the deaf, which would have been the traditional option for most deaf children in years gone past. And there's three schools for the deaf still in Ireland, two in Dublin, St Mary's for deaf girls and St Joseph's for deaf boys, both in Cabra, and there's a third school then in Limerick. And the fourth option then would be for children who are deaf but might have another disability, and they might attend a special school for children other than schools for the deaf, you know, so it might be a special school for children with learning disabilities. So depending on the individual needs of the child, there's a wide variety in terms of where they go to school. those same options would exist then at post-primary level. To a lesser extent, the units attached to mainstream schools, there's fewer of those at secondary level than there would be at primary. We have about 10 at primary level. There's maybe only 3 or 4 at secondary level now, and they open and close depending on the need of a local area. But again, the same continuum of mainstream and deaf schools, and then other special schools would exist for post-primary students. Going on to third level, then students can apply through the DARE programme to go to third level. They can attend universities or ITs, and we would see deaf children progressing to all of those areas. And then there's a number of educational opportunities specifically for deaf people in the further education sector. So the Irish Deaf Society, for example, would run a wide variety of classes that's taught by deaf tutors through Irish Sign Language for deaf people, and then other further education opportunities as well. So there's quite a wide variety, and a lot of it would be the same as what's available to hearing children, except that we provide additional supports for deaf children when they're there.
You've provided a really comprehensive summary of what's available there, Elizabeth, across all the levels. And if we take it a step further then, across those levels, how are the needs of students who are deaf or hard of hearing different from other students?
I suppose the major issue there would be in terms of language use, and again, there's variety across deaf children at the primary sector of whether or not they would use speech or sign language as their method of preferred communication. So their particular needs then when they come into the classroom would be around their language needs. If they're using sign language, they would need to have some provision of sign language in the classroom. If that's in mainstream, it's almost taken for granted that the teacher won't have sign language. We don't expect that mainstream teachers are adequate signers, so you're talking about bringing someone else into the classroom that would provide communication through sign language.
Would that be a special needs assistant?
At present, that is how it has been dealt with in the past. You would have a special needs assistant who provides communication support. I think that there may be some changes to that en route. I'm not 100% at present, but it might evolve into a new role where it would be specific to communication support for children who are deaf.
And what about then at post-primary and third level?
Again, the same issues would present, I suppose, in terms of language and communication. At post-primary, we see other more, socially oriented issues in deaf children that might begin to become a little self-conscious of themselves as teenagers. You know, they might be a little bit more reluctant to have supports attached to them in the classroom, more so than they would have been in primary school. So there's a need for sensitivity at that stage from teaching staff to make sure that they don't draw undue attention. And yet, at the same time, to make sure that deaf children are getting the supports that they need in post-primary. In third level, then, access to interpreters can be a difficult issue because of the shortage of ISL interpreters that we have in Ireland. So some students might opt to take a note taker or a speed text operator, in particular if they don't use sign language. We would have deaf people moving on to third level who haven't signed in the past and they would like to continue using English as their mode of communication. So the supports, I suppose, are really tailored for each individual student as they come into each educational environment.
And Elizabeth, what can a teacher do if they hear in September that they're going to have a child who is deaf or hard of hearing enrolling and they want to provide the best possible support that they can do? What would you recommend?
I suppose the first thing that the teacher should do, and this might happen without the teacher even needing to organise it, would be to have contact with the child's visiting teacher. The visiting teacher service for deaf children kicks in as soon as we identify a child as being deaf, and they would liaise between the family home and with schools, and they help with providing advice and support to parents and teachers. So the visiting teacher would be able to help a new teacher, I suppose, with someone who's about to teach a deaf child for the first time, with strategies that they should use in the classroom. They'll help them to get various assistive technology if that's needed. You might have a radio aid system for your child, or you could have a sound field system in the room. If the child has a hearing aid or a cochlear implant, the visiting teacher will give information to the teacher about how to make sure that those are working properly, about what it means to have a child with a hearing aid or a cochlear implant in your class. So that would all be done in tandem, I suppose, with the visiting teacher service. Teachers, of course, then should keep an open line of communication with the family as well and with parents at home. A lot of teachers that I would have met over the years would do that with like a home school diary where they'd keep parents informed of what happened during the day with the child. And that's particularly important with deaf children who have language delay, because the child mightn't be in a position to come home and communicate adequately with their parents about what happened in the classroom during the day. So if you have a home school diary like that, it helps with improving language and communication in the home and with keeping parents up to date with what's happening in the school as well.
And is every deaf student or hard of hearing student assigned a visiting teacher?
Yeah, all deaf children who are identified as having a permanent deafness would be assigned to the visiting teacher service. Now, the amount of I suppose time that the visiting teacher allocates to that student would depend on a case-by-case basis, really depending on the severity of the needs that the child has. But children with permanent deafness would have access to a visiting teacher.
And to what extent do such students communicate by speech or by sign language?
That's quite varied. It depends again on the degree of deafness that children will have and the age of onset. For children who are born profoundly deaf who would have what we call prelingual deafness, so they lose their hearing before they develop language, so they might have meningitis as infants or something like that. For those children, it's quite difficult for them, not impossible, but quite difficult for them to develop spoken language. And you would usually see a lot of parents who would use sign language, in particular with that group of children in the early years, to improve communication in the home and to give a head start in language development for their child. A lot of children who are deaf, though the vast majority of them, in fact 90%, are born to hearing families. So many of them will try, maybe in tandem with sign language, to have spoken language acquisition as well. So you see variety across families.
How does provision in Ireland compare to provision for deaf and hard of hearing students in other countries, Elizabeth?
It's quite difficult to make international comparisons, I suppose, because each country has its own system. And then even within individual countries, for example, in the United States, policy and provision in the state of California can be quite different to policy and provision in different states. So it can be hard to make international comparisons. I think one thing probably about the Irish system, though, that's quite unique in comparison to other countries, is that we don't have many primary school teachers in this country who are themselves deaf, and that would be quite different to other schools where you would have, you know, schools in the UK or in the US where you would have deaf people working as primary school teachers in the deaf education sector. In Ireland, mostly because of the Irish language requirement, we haven't had deaf people becoming qualified primary school teachers, which means that we don't have native or near native users of ISL in the deaf education primary sector.
That's Irish Sign Language.
It is, yeah, sorry. So for that reason, the Irish context is quite different, I suppose, to other countries where you would have the presence of deaf adults in the primary school system. In the secondary school system, we have a number of deaf adults working as secondary school teachers. But like I said, because of the Irish language requirement, it hasn't trickled down to primary just yet. But it's something that's definitely in discussion with the Department of Education at the moment, and hopefully we'll see some changes to that in the coming years.
Indeed, yeah, and I'm sure even as role models that would be important for the students.
Yeah, it's incredibly important, in particular for deaf children growing up, that they would know and meet other deaf adults. If you read the deaf education literature, a lot of deaf people will talk about their own childhoods and not having met deaf adults before, and thinking as children that they would either grow up to become hearing or that they would die when they were young because they had never met a deaf adult before. And that's quite a sad situation if you think about that deaf children who were surrounded by hearing adults literally didn't know what would become of them as adults. So it's quite important for them to have access to positive deaf adult role models, in particular because most of them will come predominantly from hearing families, and they mightn't have that access that you would take for granted, I suppose, for other children.
How has technology impacted on how deaf and hard of hearing students can participate in the education system?
Well, there's been significant developments, I suppose, in terms of the technology side. From the audiology side of things, hearing aids would have been really the only method of acoustic technology for deaf children for a long time. But with the development of cochlear implants now in the last number of decades, that's really revolutionised children, I suppose, being able to access sound and move into mainstream education environments where that mightn't have been a possibility for them before this. As well as that, then technology like sound field systems, which benefit hearing children as well in the classroom, and I'm sure it's something that the listeners would be used to, the idea of sound field systems, and for teachers as well. But that has significant benefits for deaf children. Where
could you just say a little bit about what they are exactly?
Sound field systems are it's essentially using a microphone in the classroom, where your teacher will have a small microphone, and it'll be amplified. The sound is amplified into a number of speakers that are positioned around the classroom. So unlike using a radio aid, where the sound is sent from a microphone directly to a deaf child's hearing aid, so nobody else in the classroom hears an amplified sound, when you use a sound field system, it's amplified throughout the classroom, so the hearing children will also receive an amplified version of the teacher's voice. So it's quite good in terms of addressing vocal fatigue in teachers, which I'm sure is something in the primary school sector that teachers are well used to dealing with. But for deaf children, that has made a big difference in terms of them being able to access the teacher's voice in the classroom. One of the difficulties with the advances in technology, though, is that sometimes we lose sight of the fact that it's still difficult, or that there can be things that we miss out on. So one example that I tend to use a lot of the time is if a teacher's in a classroom and they have a sound field system that they're using, and they're asking a group of questions, like they might ask, you know, what's the capital of France? And a child at the back answers Paris. What's the capital of Italy? Or what's the capital of Sweden? And the hearing children are getting all of the answers as well. But for the deaf child, it's only the teacher's voice that's being amplified. So they hear all the questions, but they don't hear any of the answers unless the teacher remembers to repeat it. So sometimes technology can mask other difficulties for deaf children, and we think that everything is solved. So there's still a degree of concentration required, I suppose, from everyone involved.
And are there, we've concentrated a lot on what's going on inside the classroom. Are there particular challenges, say, in terms of the playground?
I suppose, like for most children, it's the interpersonal relationships outside of the classroom in the playground. And if children themselves, hearing children, this is, if children themselves aren't deaf aware, they mightn't realise why a particular child needs, for example, that you might tap them on the shoulder to let them know that you're trying to get their attention. If you're just calling their name and they don't respond, some hearing children might think that, you know, that they're being ignored, or that this deaf child is just rude because they haven't responded to me. But that's very easily rectified with a little bit of very simple deaf awareness training for children. And I think that for the most part, from my own observations, hearing children are very quick to accommodate and acclimatise to having deaf children in the classroom and in the playground around them.
Okay, yeah, that's, I mean, I hadn't even thought about the importance of other pupils being deaf aware. That's very interesting. Your own interest in this area of working with deaf and hard of hearing students, how did that come about?
It's I work in this profession from a purely professional interest, which is quite uncommon. I think most people that work in the deaf education sector, or at least working with the deaf community, tend to have a familial connection. They've got a family member or relatives or friends or someone who's deaf. For me, it started with an interest in sign language. I was just absolutely captivated by it as a child. It was my own primary school teacher, actually, in second class, brought in a video of the Helen Keller story. And as a child, it was my first time to see sign language, and I was completely captivated by it and wanted to know more about it. And when I was studying in university, then I had the opportunity to study sign language, but had to learn about the history of deaf education as part of the component for that particular class. And once I learned about the history of deaf education and sort of some of the contemporary debates in the field, I became absolutely hooked on it. So from it's developed from there. I did a master's in deaf education in the US and returned to Ireland to do my PhD, and I've been working in the field since.
And if teachers wanted to do something like that, that could actually help them to be better, like, would you advise them to learn sign language, or is there something else that they could do if they were interested in developing professionally in this area?
I would recommend to any teacher to learn sign language, whether or not they have a deaf child in their class. If they have an interest in it, I think it's a fantastic thing to pursue. And there's classes held nationally, so you should be able to get a sign language class in your local area. There's several reasons why it's a good idea. You never know when you might have a deaf child in your classroom, or even a hearing child with deaf family members. And while you probably won't have enough Irish sign language to be able to communicate with a deaf adult after just doing a few classes at an introductory level, you might have enough just to have, you know, a general hello, how are you doing? And that's quite nice to be able to have that degree of communication with deaf people. It also improves on, I suppose, your understanding of what it is to learn another language. And as adults, when we've come through the education system, sometimes we forget that it can be difficult to learn another language, and especially difficult to learn through a language that is a second language for you. So when you're sitting in a sign language classroom and your teacher is not using any speech, you learn how much concentration is required to work in a second language. And that's often the case for a lot of deaf children and a lot of non-national children in the Irish context as well. So from a professional development and a personal development level, it's beneficial, I suppose, for teachers to have that experience.
And how rich is sign language as a language in terms of, you know, using different tenses or in terms of synonyms and things like that? Is it, well, can you comment on it?
I can. It's sometimes difficult to comment on it for radio because I want to give you examples, which you'll only be able to see. But Irish Sign Language is a complete and full language. It has its own grammar and syntax and structure. So yes, we have tenses. Yes, you have synonyms and idioms and all of the things that you would expect to find in a spoken language. It's different to sign languages used in other countries. So it's different to British Sign Language or American Sign Language. It's an incredibly complex language to learn. I think sometimes people go to sign language classes with the misconception that it's going to be quite easy to learn, that it's a lot like gesture and that having, you know, kind of good pantomime skills is going to help. And while those skills will help, it's certainly a lot more complicated than that, and the linguistic research into the field has proven that. So I'm still trying to master my use of ISL, and I've been learning it for years.
And finally, Elizabeth, and you've kind of touched on this, I'm just thinking that this, as you said, is a radio programme, and one group of people who might be very interested in hearing the content are the people who can't listen to it, people who are deaf and hard of hearing. How do they manage, or what can radio do, if it can do anything, to be more accessible to such listeners or potential listeners?
Well, I think earlier this year we had one of the first examples of a radio show that had been interpreted into Irish Sign Language and was put up as a video podcast, you know, with an ISL interpreter, so that deaf audiences could access the full radio programme because it had been provided in ISL. A probably more cost-effective method of doing that if smaller radio stations aren't able to afford the use of an ISL interpreter would be to provide a captioned service. So if you're putting up a podcast, to have maybe a transcript of the interview or something similar to that. I know yesterday I translated an article that had been written for an Irish language newspaper on an issue of deafness, so again that would have been inaccessible to many deaf people who don't speak Irish. So just to making those things more accessible to that audience is something that I think radios in particular can work on, and it's something that we've seen some developments on in the last couple of months, but there's certainly a good bit more to do.
And that was Dr. Elizabeth Matthews from the Deaf Education Centre on the Marion campus in Cabra in Dublin. And I'll do my best to get a transcript of the interview up on the website as soon as I can. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on InsideEd.com or on iTunes. You can also email us, and our email address is insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to this week's guest, Elizabeth Matthews. Now, we won't be on the air next week or the week after that, but in 3 weeks' time I'll be bringing you an interview with a man whose voice was synonymous with educational broadcasting in this country from the 1970s to the 1990s. So until this day, 3 weeks, have a peaceful Christmas and a great new year from my colleague Barry Hennessy and from me, Sean Delaney. Thank you for listening.